and welcome to Iris. This is Trevor Brass reading you the Sioux City Journal for Sunday, June 7th, 2020. Well, things looking to be a little sunnier and warmer today. We can expect winds becoming strong, 20 to 30 mile per hour range and temperatures around 96. Tonight things will be mainly clear, windy, and very warm with the temperatures around 75 degrees. Winds still in that 20 to 30 miles per hour range. Tomorrow things will be mostly sunny, windy, and hot at the 15 to 25 mile per hour wind range. Temperatures will be from 95 as a high, low of 67. On Tuesday, it'll become windier and cooler with the winds from about 12 to 25 miles per hour, looking at high of 70, so things will cool off considerably, low of 54. Wednesday, it'll be mostly sunny, breezy, and pleasant. 75 for a high, low of 56. Thursday, again, kind of same thing. Mostly sunny and nice. 76 a high, 50 for a low. So that actually looks like a pretty pleasant set days of weather coming up ahead. So let's go to the today's front page and see what we have in store for us. First, main spread story is Courtyard by Marriott opens amid COVID-19 pandemic. This is about that new hotel downtown that was built connected to the Sioux City Convention Center. The article begins from Sioux City. This coming fall and the spring of 2021 are shaping up as busy seasons for the recently renovated Sioux City Convention Center and newly opened Courtyard by Marriott Hotel. Ivanat Torres, Director of Sales and Marketing for the Convention Center and adjacent hotel, said many of the events that were postponed and canceled due to COVID-19 pandemic have already been rebooked. She said the Convention Center, which closed in mid-March along with other city-operated buildings, hopes to reopen late this month. Quote, we have a few events coming up here in June and July, and of course we'll be following all the CDC guidelines and regulations, such as wearing face masks and gloves, she said. The 150-room Courtyard by Marriott Hotel officially opened on May 14th, but the ribbon-cutting and grand opening ceremony was delayed due to an undetermined date amid a surge in coronavirus activity in Siouxland. Torres said a virtual ribbon-cutting event to celebrate the new hotel is in the works. Quote, of course, it has been slow but steady as anticipated here in the Siouxland market. Overall, we're pretty happy with where we are, she said of business. Even under the situation that we are all currently facing, our field offices are all still open. We are actively still booking events and room blocks as well for the hotel, so we're really looking forward for it to pick up coming this summer and in the fall. The hotel, which has a $14 to $15 million price tag, features a business and exercise center to accommodate community functions, social events, business, and conventions. Hotel guests and other visitors to downtown park in a new ramp behind the hotel. Kinseth Hospitality Incorporated, a North Liberty, Iowa-based company, manages both the convention center and the hotel. A new addition and renovations to Gallery C were unveiled at the Convention Center in late December. The more than $3 million in renovations include more flexible space for events, enhanced ballroom amenities, and convenient restrooms. In the fall of 2018, work began on converting 7,500 square feet of the current Convention Center space into a ballroom for events and constructing a new 7,200 square feet pre-function space that attaches to the five-story hotel. The Sioux City Council awarded the Convention Center contract to L&L Builders after rebidding the project, which initially came in nearly $1 million over budget. Since it was built in 1988, the Convention Center has hosted thousands of events. The City of Sioux City has said the new space will help market the facility and draw additional events, resulting in additional hotel/motel and sales taxes. Quote, because of social distancing, I think we've already come to the conclusion that the Tyson's going to have a tough year and so is the Convention Center, Mayor Bob Scott said. Quote, people are canceling conventions. I don't think you're going to see a whole lot of activity there this year, and I think we expect that. On May 26, Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds signed a new proclamation that permits social, community, recreational, and leisure and sporting gathering and events of more than 10 people as long as public health measures are implemented. Those measures include limiting attendance to 50 people, 50% of a venue's capacity, and maintaining 6 feet of distance between people attending the event or gathering. Quote, I think she will probably ease some of that stuff going forward, but it'll be interesting to see if that's enough, if it's enough that we can do some larger scale conventions, Scott said. Before social distancing, Torres said the convention center could typically accommodate 8 to 10 guests per table. Now, she said just 5 to 6 guests can sit at a table in order to comply with the 50% occupancy rule. The great thing, of course, about the convention center is that we have multiple ballrooms. So if, for example, an event had anticipated 150 guests, rather than us saying, you have to cut down your list in half, we'll actually be able to open an additional ballroom so we would be able to accommodate all 150 guests, she said. We would just be needing to make sure that we meet those distancing guidelines. In the hotel, Torres said guests will find every other bistro table closed off and the swimming pool shuttered. She said housekeeping staff are constantly disinfecting all of the hotel's public areas, including the bistro, gym, and hallways. Quote, we're certainly here with open arms when they're ready to travel, she said of guests. In the meantime, we're making sure that we are meeting all of those safety requirements. Alrighty. Next story is about county fairs in this area of northwest Iowa. Headline from the front page, uncertainty looms over 2020 county fairs in northwest Iowa. From Mobile, Iowa. The fate of county fairs in northwest Iowa, some of which are hugely popular summertime events, remains up in the air as of this week due to fear of the novel coronavirus. Official decisions for some of the fairs are expected in coming weeks. Announcements from recent weeks seem to indicate that the fairs will, at the very least, be formatted differently than normal. Most of the fairs are planned for next month, though some, including those in Woodbury and Clay counties, will go a bit later into this summer. The 92nd annual Woodbury County Fair, scheduled for August 5th through the 9th, will go on in some form. In a Facebook post near the end of May, fair organizers wrote that a tentative decision has been made to proceed with the 4-H and FFA livestock and static exhibits and bottle baby fair. Quote, at this time, we do not know exactly what our 2020 fair will look like, but the Woodbury County Fair Board agrees that each 4-H FFA member and bottle baby participant should have an opportunity to showcase their projects in a fair setting, fair organizers wrote in the post. Andrea Fleck, the manager of the Woodbury County Fair, said in a text message that fair organizers will decide what the county fair will look like once the Iowa State Fair announces their decision. 4-H events, she said, are a high priority, which is why organizers went ahead and planned to have those. Prospective fairgoers have been wondering what's going to happen. Attendance at last year's fair was estimated at more than 90,000. Quote, we get daily calls about the fate of the fair. We always remind people that our fair is still 2 months away and we are taking our time to make sure the right decisions for our fair and our county, Fleck said in a text message. Plymouth County Fair officials made their own announcements on Facebook this week, writing that an official announcement of their plans will be announced on June 12th. Quote, the Plymouth County Fair Board continues to monitor the COVID-19 pandemic. The board will be meeting with local officials along with public health and the emergency manager to make some decisions on the 2020 fair and what changes may need to be made in compliance with CDC guidelines, the Plymouth County Fair officials wrote. The Clay County Fair, billed as, quote, the world's greatest county fair, which attracts a purported 300,000 people, is similarly unsettled. A May 4th post on the fair's Facebook page seemed to indicate a desire to proceed with the fair, though organizers also noted that the decision to proceed or not proceed will be made in late July. Quote, at this point, the outlook for fall events remains unclear as CDC and Iowa Department of Public Health guidelines do not extend that far into the future. So we are doing what we always do, full speed ahead, planning for the world's greatest county fair, Jeremy Parsons, the fair's CEO and manager, wrote in the post. The Lyon County Fair Board announced in a Facebook post on May 29th that all non-youth fair activities would be canceled for the 2020 fair, with the exception of races held in the grandstand. The commercial building will be closed. Quote, 4-H and Future Farmers of America livestock shows will be a show-and-go format, with the wash rack facilities being closed. Static judging will be state fair style, with no conference judging taking place, Lyon County Fair officials wrote in the Facebook post. Uncertainty is perhaps the most fixed on the Iowa State Fair, a juggernaut event dating back to the 19th century that attracted more than 1.1 million people last year. State fairs in other states, including those of Indiana, North Dakota, Minnesota, Ohio, and Wisconsin, have already been called off due to the virus. A decision on the 2020 Iowa State Fair is expected by June 15th. Quote, in an effort to give us the best chance at the safest and healthiest possible Iowa State Fair in 2020, we continue to thoughtfully review our plans while carefully navigating the ever-changing COVID-19 landscape, Iowa State Fair organizers wrote on the fair's website. We ask that you continue to be patient as we gather and analyze the many unique experiences the Iowans hold near and dear at the Iowa State Fair. We don't take this decision lightly, and we know that time is of the essence. Alrighty. So, that's always a fun tradition for a lot of people is state and county fairs. So, let's hope the ones that do run and open can be done safely for everyone. Alrighty. Now, back again to the front page for our last main story. Headline, in their words, the fight for racial justice. This is from the Sioux City Des Moines Bureau. Quote, they watched the video that shocked a nation. They watched the protests erupt across the country, including throughout Iowa. They marched with those protesters. And here, these black leaders from across Iowa provide their perspectives, describe the thoughts they have had and the emotions they have experienced during these past few weeks of civil unrest across the nation. On May 25th, George Floyd, a 46-year-old black man from Minnesota, died after a white police officer kneeled on his neck for nearly 9 minutes. Floyd's death sparked outcry and protest nationwide as black Americans renewed their calls for racial justice. The Des Moines Bureau interviewed six black leaders from across Iowa to get their perspectives on the event starting with and since that fateful day. These are their words, which have been edited only for brevity and clarity. Question: what thoughts and emotions did you experience when you saw the George Floyd video? It's in parentheses. Stacy Walker is a black man, a Linn County supervisor, and a prominent figure in Democratic politics. He also serves on Task Force for Criminal Justice Reform created by Democratic presidential nominee Joe Biden and former candidate Bernie Sanders. Walker wished to make clear his viewpoints represented his feelings and opinions and not the views of the task force. Walker says, these videos, these images we see on what is becoming an all-too-frequent occurrence, I don't believe African Americans have become desensitized to this experience, even with its frequency increasing. So, every time you see this, it's another traumatic experience that you have to sort of go through the entire process of shock, of deep sadness, of grief, of outrage. It is a traumatic experience every time, and it's just hard. I don't have the appropriate words to explain that kind of trauma. That persisting trauma. Parentheses. Phyllis Thede is a black woman and a state legislator from Bettendorf. Thede says, you hearken back to the days when things have happened before, and you think to yourself, quote, here we go again. It was frustrating to watch that. That image says to me, quote, you're still less than. It's so degrading. It's so heart-wrenching. That man lost his life because of a man who appears to not care. That was awful. That was absolutely awful. Question: what is your perspective on the protests that have taken place across Iowa, most of which have been peaceful demonstrations, but some of which have included violence and vandalism? And what is it like being a part of those protests? And this author, the answer is from Ako Abdul Samad is a black man and a state legislator from Des Moines. Abdul Samad writes, "It was like being on a roller coaster that you didn't know if they have brakes on it. You didn't know if there was an ending that could even stop it. That's what it was like. And you think of the most dangerous roller coaster in the world. That's where we were on this past weekend. And we didn't know whether we were going to come off that roller coaster alive." Ray Smith is a black man and state legislator from Waterloo. Smith says, "I struggle with the term peaceful protests, because inherently, almost by definition, protests shouldn't be peaceful. Protesting is an expression of discomfort, of anguish. But what I saw last week was a protest of fear, of sadness, of injustices long not solved. So I can say that we had an aggressive, assertive protest that was nonviolent. But to think that we were singing Kumbaya and holding hands would be a misclassification. And I don't want this to misrepresent the anger and the drive. I mean, man, you can see it in people's eyes. This is changing. We want change, and this is different. While we may not have been all high fives and handshakes, our eyes are set on and our gaze was set on accomplishing something. Unfortunately, we've seen some turn in some of our protest, but we know that those individuals' goals is to distract from our overall goal and our message. So we try not to give them any life or relevance." Monique Scarlett is a black woman and school board member from Sioux City. She also co-founded Unity in the Community, which works to build relationships between the community and local law enforcement. Scarlett writes, "I also participated in one of the very first protests here in Sioux City, right after Floyd's death, and I walked in as an observer trying to talk with some young folks, because I know they're angry. So protesting is not wrong. It's when protesting goes wrong with violent destruction, and that I do not condone. We just hosted Thursday a Unity in Prayer, and we had all law enforcement, our Woodbury County Sheriff's Department, Sioux City Police Department, Unity in the Community, and our local chapter of the NAACP, that's the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People. We all came together with all of the base leaders and citizens, and we stood on the law enforcement building stairway, and it was beautiful. I mean, it was beautiful. And I watched people cry, I watched people laugh. So our focus is definitely in the right place." Betty Andrews is a black woman from Des Moines and president of the Iowa and Nebraska chapter of the NAACP. Andrews, she writes, "I was just talking with young people about how change happens. Sometimes when you think about it, even in the Bible, it talks about how God out of darkness brought change. So change sometimes starts with chaotic, messy circumstances. And then it begins to organize, and order comes in, and processes for change, and people understand and work together. And that's what we can expect." Walker writes, "This explosion of energy that we are seeing across the country represents the unheard voices of black Americans crying out for freedom and justice across centuries. While the murders of Ahmaud Arbery and Breonna Taylor and George Floyd serve as critical flashpoints, it's impossible to articulate the totality of atrocities committed against black Americans with any one march or any one protest. And I think the outrage that has embroiled much of the country manifesting itself in these protests reflects those facts. And it reflects the fact that this is about much more than just the deaths of the three aforementioned individuals. It's an eruption of raw emotion stemming from generations of systemic oppression." Take a break here. Question. We've been here before. A black person dies while being arrested or in police custody. The nation expresses outrage or grief, and then the world moves on with no changes taking place. How critical is it that this time is different, that meaningful change comes out of this moment? Smith writes, "It's life or death, man. It can be life or death. We've seen these restraint tactics of a police chokehold that can be life or death. Hiring an officer with a checkered background who has a past of severe and racial misconduct can be life or death. Not allowing the state attorney general to investigate a case of police murder or police shooting, it robs families of justice. Action is needed now because it's life or death. That's the reality of it for some of us. And that's why the sense of urgency is there, because we know what the ramifications are if it doesn't take place. Monique Scarlett writes, "This time is a little bit different. And the reason why I say that is because of the younger generation, as they are saying, quote, we'll not take this treatment anymore. I am asking the President of the United States to send the right message about racial injustice and to create a plan for how we're going to change this. Because if these orders are not given, I have an uncomfortable feeling that these young people are then going to go out and take justice. And we don't want that because that could go either way. It could be positive or it could be negative. Because they are tired of the urgency. We can no longer be oppressed by the past. We have to remember the past, but we can't let the past keep us in bondage. We have to focus on the future of the freedom." And so that is where these young people are at now. They are the future. So they're saying, you're not going to oppress us anymore. We want our freedom. We demand our freedom. And by any means necessary, we are going to get our freedom and our justice. So leaders have to be sensitive, and we have to listen to the cries of the community. Theed says, "I'm grateful in a way because of all this coming out, you can't turn back. You got to move forward now, you know what I mean? So all the bad stuff that's happening, we can't close our eyes anymore, and that's a good thing. That's a huge thing." Abdul Samad writes, "A lot of good was done. A lot of individuals expressed who they were. They got a chance to see what could be done. And now we got to show them the fruit. They planted the seed, we got to show them the fruit. And then we got to make them part of that fruit in picking the fruit. If we do that, all of this was worth it. If we don't do that, we'll be back here again." Alrighty. So that's our front page stories. Let's turn to the inside. So we got in store here. Oh, here's an online poll the Associated Journal puts out. Yesterday's poll questioning asking readers, "Are you wearing a mask when you are out in public?" 24% says, "I never have." 12% said, "I did, but I have stopped doing so." And 64% of respondents said that they continue to do so. And there was a total of 332 votes about mask wearing. So it's kind of an interesting little tidbit. Especially as I'm sure some people are getting kind of tired of this coronavirus. I know I am. I'd like to go see my family in person, but, you know, y'all gotta stay safe. Okay. Hey, some good news about coronavirus, I at least in form of testing, I guess. Headline from this, the local state, regional news. Dakota County sees zero new COVID-19 infections on Saturday. From South Sioux City. Saturday was a good day for Dakota County, as no new COVID-19 infections nor any deaths due to the virus were recorded. Neighboring Woodbury County also reported no new deaths, although there were 37 new infections. The daily tally of new infections has slowed in the Sioux City Metro compared to the days in April and May when hundreds of new infections were reported. The majority, that's being 2,110 of Woodbury County's 2,900 known COVID-19 infections, have recovered to date. 37 deaths have also been recorded, according to the Siouxland District Health Department. Of Dakota County's 1,700 known infections, some 971 are believed to have recovered, according to data from the Dakota County Health Department. Other counties in northwest Iowa recorded new COVID-19 infections, though no county recorded more than 45. Buena Vista County now has 1,112 infections. Crawford has 567. Sioux County has 311. Plymouth has 155. O'Brien and Cherokee each have 46. Dickinson has 41. Sac has 30. Clay has 29. Monona has 27. And Lyon has 25. In Southeast South Dakota, Union County has 92 infections. Yankton has 53 and Clay has 27. In northeast Nebraska, only Wayne and Thurston counties recorded new cases. Thurston now has 121 and Wayne has 25. Across Iowa, some 21,478 people have tested positive for the virus, of which 12,757 are considered to have been recovered. A total of 599 people have died, according to the Iowa Department of Public Health. In South Dakota, 5,367 people have been diagnosed with COVID-19, but only 1,029 of those are considered to have active infections. 65 deaths in the state have been attributed to the virus, according to the South Dakota Department of Health. Some 15,543 Nebraskans have tested positive for the virus. The state does not report data on the recoveries. The state's Department of Health and Human Services has recorded 188 deaths attributable to the virus. So, it looks like some good news there that things are hopefully slowing down here in the area, in our tri-state area. All right, let's turn to the news briefs here. First headline's kind of a sad one. It is a sad one. 13-year-old boy drowned Saturday in Plymouth County Pond. From Lamar's, Iowa. A 13-year-old boy drowned Saturday afternoon in a swimming pond in Plymouth County. According to a press release from the Plymouth County Sheriff's Office, at around 2:10 p.m. Saturday, the Sheriff's Office took a call of a missing 13-year-old boy last seen in the area of 20,386 County Road, K-49, which is the Kellen Ponderosa south of Lamar's. Plymouth County deputies, along with the Plymouth County Dive Team and Lamar's Fire Department ambulance crews, were all dispatched to the scene, along with a search boat from the Iowa Department of Natural Resources. The boy had been swimming with a friend to a platform in the middle of a pond, according to the Sheriff's Department. A witness on the scene reported that no one saw the boy go under. The DNR boat was deployed, and the Plymouth County Dive Team located the boy about 15 feet underwater at around 4:04 p.m. He was transported to Floyd Valley Hospital in Lamar's, where he was then pronounced dead. Other agencies on scene included Lamar's Police, the Iowa State Patrol, and the Sioux County Dive Team. Next headline, Iowa State Senator Roy B. Smith introduces bill to curb absentee voting. Despite the record voter turnout in the June 2nd primary election, largely due to absentee ballots, Iowa Republican State... Iowa State Republican Senator Roy B. Smith, District 47, has introduced legislation seeking to amend the process that made absentee voting easier. House File 2486 seeks to undo emergency action taken by Iowa Secretary of State Paul Pate in the wake of the ongoing COVID-19 pandemic. In an effort to minimize risks to the voting public, Pate, also a Republican, sent absentee ballot request forms to every active registered voter in April. As a result, absentee voting surged. Smith's amendment would allow the Secretary of State to make changes to election processes in the case of weather or wartime emergencies, but not for the current pandemic. According to anyone requesting absentee ballots or voting early, would be required to provide voter identification. Smith's amendment also would prevent Pate from making changes to earlier absentee voting in the time of an emergency. Scott County Auditor Roxana Mortiz said the ability for residents to vote by mail was timely not only because of COVID-19, but also due to civil unrest in Davenport late Sunday night and into Monday morning. Quote, 2 days after two people are killed and an officer is put in the hospital, we're running a primary election, Moritz said Friday. In Blackhawk County, they had a bomb threat today and there was unrest in Iowa City on Wednesday. We know these things are going to continue. As we move into the November election, there are safeguards that we as auditors are going to have to put in place. This is not going to go away overnight. Out of 127,763 registered voters in Scott County, 24,259, or about 19%, cast ballots on June 2nd. Moritz said that more than 17,000 absentee ballots were returned in, and only about 3% of ballots were cast in person. Quote, the success came from working closely with the Iowa State Association of County Auditors, the auditors and Secretary Pate in a bipartisan way to do what was right for the voters of Iowa, Moritz said. And Smith's amendment, not even a week after the election, is a 30-page amendment to a two-sentence bill that limits most of the things Pate allowed to have happen in the primary to help us deliver a successful election. Smith's amendment is currently in the committee stage of the Senate. He could not be reached for comment on Friday. Smith was added to the, quote, Voter Suppression Hall of Shame in October by Let America Vote, a Washington, D.C.-based voter rights political action group, when he introduced legislation that would have required absentee votes to be turned in by Election Day and changed the time polls close in Iowa from 9 p.m. to 8 p.m. Smith's bill also would have made it harder for students and rural voters by outlawing early voting satellite locations in any state-owned buildings, which include college campuses. Moritz, who also serves as president of the Iowa State Association of County Auditors, issued a letter Friday to the state government committee on which Smith chairs. Quote, County auditors, as local commissioners of elections, are baffled by this, Moritz wrote. The 2020 primary was very successful based on a variety of metrics, largely due to the steps taken by Pate. Counties experienced record or near-record turnout. Election day went very smoothly. Results were rapidly available. Why would the state want to cripple the process that led to such success? Quote, Secretary Pate and his staff provided great leadership and assistance to counties to deal with the hazards of the COVID-19 pandemic in the conduct of an election. One of the most critical aspects of their assistance was to provide voters with absentee ballot request forms, making it easier to vote from home at a time when Governor Kim Reynolds was counseling Iowans to leave their homes only when absolutely necessary. Quote, the large absentee turnout had the unexpected benefit of relieving many voters of making the decision whether or not to go to the polls in a time of unrest in their communities, Moritz continued. We hope that the legislature will reject House File 2486, not just in response to the concerns of county auditors, but out of respect to the hundreds of thousands of Iowa voters who just exercised their rights in the most basic act of democratic government, without having to choose between their rights and their health. Pate said the state broke turnout records in it for a June primary election after more than 500,000 voters cast ballots on Tuesday. In Scott County, nearly 61% were Democratic ballots and 39% were Republican. Moritz anticipates absentee voting will remain strong moving forward. Quote, we do have to prepare for the worst, Moritz said. Hopefully we're not in the same place in November, but the likelihood that we're going to be is greater than not. Alrighty. Let's see here. Sometimes these articles don't always render the same on the online version as they do on the paper. Okay, so let's go back to the briefs here. Headline, Sioux City woman jailed on attempted murder charge. A Sioux City woman has been jailed on attempted murder and other charges after a shooting incident in Morningside on Friday evening. According to a press release from the Sioux City Police Department, at around 6:54 p.m. Friday, officers were called to the 5600 block of Hayworth Avenue for a reported shooting. Officers found a man there that had been shot by a family member. He was taken to Mercy One Sula Medical Center for treatment. His condition is presently unknown. Detectives then charged 56-year-old Georgia Grau of Sioux City with attempted murder, aggravated domestic assault, and going armed with intent. She was held in the Woodbury County Jail on a $5,000 bond, which has actually since been increased, I saw. Headline, Woman Drowned Saturday Afternoon at Browns Lake, from Salix, Iowa. A 46-year-old woman drowned Saturday afternoon at Browns Lake. Woodbury County Chief Deputy Tony Wingert said Saturday evening that first responders were called to the lake sometime between 4:15 and 4:30 p.m. Saturday. The woman, who has not been identified, was swimming during a boat outing. Quote, got too far away from the boat, struggled to get back, family members attempted to rescue her, and she needed to be resuscitated, Wingert said. A helicopter transported her to a hospital, but she did not survive. Responding agencies included the Woodbury County Conservation, the Woodbury County Sheriff's Department, the Salix Ambulance, and a Life Flight helicopter. Browns Lake has been the site of occasional drownings in the past, including a near drowning in the summer of 2018 and drownings in July of 1973, June of 1976, and August 1943. Two people were hospitalized last summer after a tubing accident at the lake. Headline: Body Found in River Identified. Authorities have released the name of a man whose body was found in the Missouri River Thursday afternoon. According to a press release from the Sioux City Police Department, the individual was 27-year-old Mark John of Sioux City. At around 2:18 p.m. on Thursday, the Sioux City Police Department received a report of a body in the river at the confluence of Missouri and Perry Creek. The body was recovered by Sioux City Fire Rescue. No foul play is presently suspected in John's death. An autopsy is pending and the investigation is currently ongoing. Alrighty, let's look for more local stories to read here. Well, let's go to, so we can get some letters to the editor quickly, as we're about at the 35-minute mark, so. Okay, here's from the, this is the main editorial from the editorial staff of the Sioux City Journal. And they write, keep public informed on West Middle School. And the Sioux City Journal editorial staff writes, before classes resume in actual classrooms of the Sioux City Community School District for the 2020 through 21 school year, the public, and in particular the West Middle School community, should be assured concerns about a troubled atmosphere within the school will be addressed and should know the specific details of how. Last month, the report of a consultant, Washington, D.C.-based K-12 Insight, was delivered to Superintendent Paul Gaussman and Board of Education members. On Friday, the report was released to the public with the agenda for Monday's board meeting. Quote, almost all the findings in the full report are consistent with what we've been telling the administration about West Middle since December, Sioux City Board of Education member Dan Greenwell told the Journal for a May 16 story. In December, concerns were shared with the district leaders by some West Middle School teachers in an 8-page document. That document listed concerns within these categories: leadership and communication, district directives and fidelity of program implementation, academics, student behavior, and staffing. In January, Gaussman recommended the district hire a third-party consultant to look into the West Middle teacher concerns. We supported the decision to hire a third party free of the potential for conflicts of interest. Quote, the K-12 Insight report is complete and the results give a very clear picture, clear perspective on the direction we need to go for immediate long-term improvements, Board of Education member Monique Scarlett told the Journal for the May 16 story. Quote, the feedback from the participants was very helpful and specific, which identified strengths and weaknesses, along with recommendations. Quote, we urge and expect full, robust public discussion of the report at Monday's board meeting. If parts of the report released to the public were redacted, the administration should explain why. This discussion should begin to form a public strategy for how the district will manage problems at West Middle School for the new academic year and beyond. Some of those actions should speak to preventing similar problems from arising in other schools. Alrighty, just got two letters to the editor here for the Sunday Journal. First one is simply titled, A Plea. And the letter writer writes, this is a plea to my fellow friends and fellow, to my evangelical friends and fellow Christians. Please, may we each take a moment and prayerfully consider the example and teachings of Christ, who said he came not to bring peace but a sword, bringing justice and mercy, and separating those who said, Lord, Lord, with their lips, but whose hearts were far from him. He said, we'll know his followers by their fruits. This applies to our elected officials, who remain silent as they ignore the behavior of our president when he usurps our constitution for his own purposes, along with the sacred scriptures that we hold dear. Our country is in danger when we allow this. So are our immortal souls. Signed, Jackie Austin of Rock Rapids, Iowa. Next letter is titled, 1950 Central Grad Sends Class of 2020 Congrats. They write, I graduated from Sioux City Central High School in 1950 when it was the Castle on the Hill. I want to congratulate the class of 2020. You have a challenge in front of you, but with your youth and determination, I'm sure you are up to the challenge. The world has changed in many ways for the better in these 70 years. When I graduated, there was no TV. Jet planes were only in the military. The world wasn't as connected as it is now. If the coming 70 years see the change I have seen, it could be a wonderful place. Some things have not changed as much as they should. Racial discrimination and religious bigotry are major problems from my perspective. It is the youth of America who can take on this challenge. We have a current challenge to our democracy occurring as well. We must protect it from people who want to do it harm. The Constitution and the laws derived from it have made our country a great democracy, and it is your challenge to keep it moving in the right direction. Godspeed and good luck. Signed, Gordon Kohler of Lafayette, California, and 1950 graduate of Sioux City Central High School. Alrighty. Let's go now to the obituaries. We are 40 minutes in to our time together. Looks like we just got one page of obituaries to read, so that should be a little quicker than usual. First one is Paul F. Schneider of Sioux City. Paul F. Schneider, 83, of Sioux City, passed away on Thursday, June 4th, at home surrounded by loved ones after a lengthy illness. Memorial service will be at 7 p.m. Thursday at Meyer Brothers Colonial Chapel at 3220 Stone Park Boulevard, Sioux City, with the Reverend Daniel Rupp officiating. The Sioux City Fire and Rescue Honor Guard will be present at the funeral home. A private burial with military honors will be held at Calvary Cemetery. The family will greet friends from 5 to 7 p.m. Thursday at the funeral home. Paul, the son of Rudolph and Matilda Schneider, was born on January 2, 1937 in Bloomfield, Nebraska. Paul was a Bloomfield B, attending Bloomfield High School, graduating in 1955. Following high school, he served in the United States Army for 2 years until being honorably discharged. On November 6, 1958, Paul was united in marriage to Lavon T. Kleinschmidt at St. Boniface Catholic Church in Sioux City. Their union was blessed with 4 children, and the family made their home in Sioux City. Lavon passed away on September 24, 2014. Paul worked for Old Home Bakery from 1958 to 1966. He joined the Sioux City Fire Department in 1966 and continued with the department until retiring in 1996. Paul was a member of Immaculate Conception Church in Sioux City. His hobbies were hunting, fishing, and tinkering on small engines. He enjoyed spending time with his grandchildren and going to Bloomfield to visit family or the family farm. He also enjoyed traveling, be it just a day trip or a couple of weeks. Next, James D. Burks of Sioux City. James D. Burks, 83, of Sioux City, passed away Wednesday, June 3rd. Service will be 11 a.m. Tuesday at Waterbury Funeral Service of Sioux City. Burial will follow the service in Memorial Park Cemetery. Visitation will begin 1 hour prior to service time Tuesday at the funeral home. Jim was born on May 29, 1937 in Salem, South Dakota, son of Clyde and Rena Lesky Burks. He was raised in the South Bottoms of Sioux City and attended Central High School. Jim joined the United States Army in 1954, stationed in the Panama Canal Zone, and was honorably discharged in 1957. On January 7, 1961, Jim married his soulmate and love of his life, Judy Peters. Jim worked as an electrician technician at Mid-American Energy for 38 years. In his younger years, he boxed in the Junior Golden Gloves and for the U.S. Army. He enjoyed playing fast-pitch softball, bowling, and working in his yard. James also loved playing horseshoes with family and friends. Next, Donna Raymond of Sanborn, Iowa, 85, died Friday, June 5, 2020. Memorial service to be held at a later date. Burial will be at Roseland Cemetery near Sanborn, the Sanborn funeral home of the city of the same name. Next, Orrin C. Rasmussen of Ida Grove, Iowa. Orrin C. Rasmussen, 83, of Ida Grove, passed away on Friday, June 5th, at Willowdale Wellness Village in Battle Creek, Iowa. Services will be 2 p.m. Wednesday at Faith Lutheran Church in Old Bolt, Iowa. Arrangements are under the direction of Waterbury Funeral Service of Sioux City. Oren Clifford Rasmussen was born on July 23, 1936 in Arco, Minnesota, the son of Hans and Helen Rasmussen. On January 30, 1957, he married the love of his life, Carol L. James, at the Faith Lutheran Church in Las Vegas, Nevada. They lived in the Old Bolt Arthur area for 20 years. He was self-employed at Old Bolt Plumbing and Heating. In 1997, they moved to Sioux City, where he worked for Payless Cashway and K&K Goleta. He retired in July of 1998. Oren was always found with a smile on his face and friendly words for others. He was quick to tease a waitress or anyone he knew. Oren enjoyed fishing, playing cards, and visiting with anyone he saw. He loved to stay busy and always had a plan to flip a house or trade something to make a buck. He was a quick help out to anyone, and everyone was quickly a friend of his with any task. Oren loved watching old westerns and whistling a country tune. Patricia Pat Everingham of Sioux City. Patricia Pat Everingham, 88, of Sioux City, passed away Sunday morning, May 31st, at a local hospital. Memorial service will be 10 a.m. Monday at Meyer Brothers Colonial Chapel. Burial will be in Calvary Cemetery. Pat was a lifelong resident of Sioux City. She was born September 5, 1931, to James H. Everingham and Phyllis Norton Everingham at St. Vincent's Hospital. Pat was educated K-12 at Cathedral School, where she was president of the last graduating class in 1949. Pat was employed in the offices of Sioux City Grain Exchange, F.W. Woolworth, Woolco, and AmeriCare. She traveled throughout the United States, Europe, and North Africa. For many years, she was the main care provider for her aunt, Mary Norton, as well as her parents. Next, Vernon L. Witzka of South Sioux City, 79, died Tuesday, June 2nd, 2020. Services will be held June 8th, 1 p.m. at Meyer Brothers Morningside Chapel. Burial will be at Memorial Park Cemetery. Visitation will be June 8th, noon to 1 p.m. at the funeral home. Larry G. Newell of South Sioux City, 65, died Friday, June 5th, 2020. Graveside service will be June 10th at 10 a.m. at the Lyons, Nebraska Cemetery. Visitation will be June 9th, 6 to 8 p.m. at Myers Brothers Morningside Chapel in Sioux City. Next, Carol J. Baney, B-A-H-N-E-Y. Carol J. Baney, 82, of Sioux City, died Thursday, June 4th at Sunrise Retirement Community in Sioux City. Services will be 10:30 a.m. Wednesday at Morningside Chapel, Christy Smith Funeral Homes, 1801 Morningside Avenue. Burial will be in Memorial Park Cemetery. Visitation will be 5 to 7 p.m. Tuesday at the funeral home. Carol Jean Lefebvre, the daughter of Don and Lillian Bentley Lefebvre, was born on January 25, 1938 in Danbury, Iowa. She graduated from Central High School. On May 20, 1960, Carol was knighted in marriage with D. Scott Baney at First Baptist Church in Sioux City. She was a dedicated homemaker. Scott died on June 20, 2005. Carol was very active at First Baptist Church and taught Sunday school and Bible school, among many other things. She was a member of the Sioux City Garden Club and enjoyed gardening, growing flowers, and crafts. Martha Solzbach Del Guidance, that's D-L-G-U-I-D-I-C-E, of Wallingford, Connecticut, formerly of Sioux City. Martha Lynn Solzbach Del Guidance, 63, of Wallingford, formerly of Sioux City, passed away unexpectedly on Saturday, May 30th. There will be a private service held later for Marty in Connecticut. Martha was born on February 22, 1957, in Sioux City to Donald and Gloria Solzbach. She attended Sioux City schools, graduating from North High School. Marty, as her friends and family called her, loved life and refused to let anything get her down. Her smile was so contagious. She was often found outdoors in her garden planting flowers. She was an avid bird lover and adorned her yard with countless birdhouses and decorations to attract them to where she was. Marti was a champion setback player and lived her life like she played the game. She threw caution to the wind and had fun and made sure everyone around her was having fun too. Next, Roy L. Sampson of Sioux City, 70, died Thursday, June 4th. Celebration of life will be held at a later date. Myers Brothers Colonial Chapel will arrange. Next, Elizabeth R. Akins of South Sioux City, age 88, died Thursday, June 4th. No services will be held per her wishes. Moore and Becker Hunt Funeral Home will arrange. Marilyn A. Hansen of Pearson, Iowa, 84, died Saturday, June 6th. Johnson Ernst Funeral Home of Kingsley, Iowa. Finally, Arvin Benjamin Nelson of Sioux City, 74, died Saturday, June 6th. Christy Smith, Morningside Chapel, will handle those arrangements. All right, friends, we have just about 10 minutes together. So we will, let's do something a little upbeat or something a little more informal. Let's see if we can do the horoscopes and the Dear Abby. It's always... let's see here. If I can just find it, by golly. Sometimes you have to... Sunday paper is all thick and... Gotta look for... the Dear Abby content. And whatnot. And the horoscopes. Also kind of the same deal with them. As well. Birthdays. Hey, there we go. Okay. Here's Dear Abby's column. Here at the top of her column says, video dinner parties help distant family stay close. Dear Abby, may I share with you a way my husband and I are staying connected? My daughter came up with the idea. She and her daughter live a good distance from us. She decided the four of us should have a virtual dinner together 3 times a week. We move our dining chairs together and position a tablet opposite us so we are visible on the screen. They do the same. We use FaceTime or Skype or a similar app would also work to connect online. We set dinner on the table, say grace together, and proceed to eat, all the while talking, joking, and laughing as if we were in each other's presence. Abby, I can't tell you how much this has alleviated the feelings of isolation. We look forward to it all day. We phone, text, and email at other times as well, but these dinners together are a very special hour or more that give us a feeling of still being connected. It's a difficult time right now, but this is such a simple thing. I bless my amazing and wonderful daughter every day for thinking of it. Signed, Staying Close in Connecticut. She writes, Dear Staying Close, for those who, because of travel restrictions or financial constraints, cannot be together in person, this is a tradition that could continue well after the quarantine is lifted. I, too, bless your amazing and wonderful daughter for coming up with the idea and you for sharing it. Salute and bon appetit. Dear Abby, my wife and I have about a dozen nieces and nephews on each side of our family. As each of them has married, we have given them generous gifts. My wife and I have 2 adult children. When our daughters were married 10 years ago, she had a big reception with all the best of everything. Our son chose to elope last year. He had a small ceremony when they returned, just parents and grandparents. My wife is now very upset that no one has acknowledged the wedding with even a card, let alone a gift. Should we bring this up to our families? Is it customary to give gifts only when there is a traditional ceremony and reception? Signed, Empty-Handed in Illinois. Dear Empty-Handed, I can see why your wife is upset. Because you have been so generous with your family members when they were married, it would have been thoughtful had they reciprocated with your son. However, the rule of etiquette is that gifts are required when someone accepts a wedding invitation and your son chose to elope instead of having one, which may explain the lack of response from your relatives. Dear Abby, my mother-in-law is wigging out because I allow our 2 cats and our dog to lick mixing bowls and dinner plates before I put them in the dishwasher. We have an active, healthy family with no allergies, chronic health problems, or obesity. Our house is clean, although I wouldn't eat off my floors. Shoes are left in the laundry room. We have never even had a case of flu, thanks to flu shots, common sense, and probably some luck. Our dishwasher is set to do a long cycle with the heated drying cycle. Am I terrible? I fail to see the problem, but she thinks I'm liable to poison the kids. Signed, Wondering in the South. Dear Wondering, you are not going to poison the kids, yourself, or her son, but you could cause problems for your feline family members if they happen to eat any garlic or onions. That said, you may give your mother-in-law a coronary if you continue letting her see what you have been doing. So in the interest of harmony, family harmony, when she's around, cut it out. Alrighty, let's do the horoscopes quickly. For Sunday, June 7th, 2020. A change that eases stress and encourages an affordable lifestyle will be within reach if you stop waffling and start putting your plans in motion. Don't waste time on people and projects that aren't right for you. Size up what's best for you and leave the past behind. Gemini, question motives, whether they are yours or someone else's. It's essential that you do that what you do or agree to be admirable. Equality and sharing the same goal will be required. Alrighty, folks. Well, that's the Sioux City Journal for Sunday, June 7th, 2020 for Iris. Your reader has been Trevor Brass, and I hope you've had a good day, or I hope this week coming forward is kind to you, and that you're able to maybe speak with a friend, you know, smell the roses. The weather's getting nicer, and I've noticed some people are kind of going out and about. Remember, just still to be safe and sensible with the coronavirus still going around. But, you know, it's also, do take care of yourself. Take care of your mental health. So, again, for Trevor Brass, reading the Sioux City Journal for the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service, have yourself a wonderful week. Bye-bye.